Inflation soared to its highest level in over a decade in April.
The biggest month-over-month increase in September, get this, 2008.
And today, inflation is the highest it's been in four decades.
Welcome to the What Matters Today podcast from the Geneva Graduate Institute. I'm Dan Graham, head of communications at the Institute. In this podcast series, we ask members of our faculty to comment on key global issues. Inflation has been a headline issue over the past few months, with key questions being, why is it so high right now? What can be done to decrease it? And how long will it last? These are some of the questions that will be addressed in this episode of What Matters Today. My guest is Professor Cedric Tsill. Cedric is Professor of International Economics at the Geneva Graduate Institute. He is also head of the Bilateral Assistance and Capacity Building for Central Banks Program and faculty associate for the Center for Finance and Development. Global inflation is at its highest rate since 2008. In the US, inflation has hit a 40-year high point this month. I guess the first question to ask is, why this recent rise in inflation?
Well, I think it's a conjunction of two factors. First of all, we had the COVID recession. Central banks and other policymakers were very aggressive in responding, rightly so. There was a lot of fiscal stimulus, a lot of monetary expansion. They did that knowing that they would take a risk that if the recovery was faster than expected, all this money would then look to buy something and they would stimulate inflation. And that's what happened. That's the first factor. For instance, take an example in the United States, all the fiscal support was not focused on people who are losing jobs. So it was really across the board. And many people who still had their jobs saved the money. Well, now they want to spend it, so we have a push of demand. That's the first factor. Okay. Second factor that came on top of that is the Ukrainian war. And this has led to a very different type of shock, what we call a supply shock. So suddenly, price of commodities and the availability of commodities has become restricted. So even if you're willing to pay, securing, for instance, wood for construction has become a challenge. So both of these factors push prices up, and the central bank is now confronted with the echo of a demand shock, all this money that wants to spend on something, and at the same time, a supply disruption coming from reduced availability of raw materials.
Some say that central banks need to act quickly and decisively before inflation becomes entrenched. What is the response of central banks?
So central banks are responding aggressively. Their tools are basically two. So first, they increase interest rates. We've seen that in the US. We've seen that in Switzerland before the European Central Bank, which came a bit as a surprise. Second, no central bank's balance sheet have become very big following the global financial crisis and COVID. So the second tool is to reduce this balance sheet. In the first step, you stop increasing them and then you start reducing. And central banks are basically geared toward doing both of these actions. The exact timing is something that they will develop more as they go along, especially for the second tool, reducing the balance sheet, which is something that we have not done in the past. Moving interest rate is something we do quite frequently, but now the balance sheet is a bit of a new tool, so they have to feel their way in the dark a little bit.
And again, regarding central banks, what can and what can't they do right now?
So it's important to bear in mind that central banks are not all powerful magicians. Okay? They're very active, rightly so. They've been since 2008. This led sometimes to an impression that, oh, whatever problem comes along, just give it to the central banks, which A, is not sound, and B, as a problem of governance, because they're unelected bodies and not the general government. They shouldn't be doing everything that has to be done, however legitimate. So what can they do? Central bank act on demand. That's the first thing that one should mind. So they cannot do anything about supply. Okay, and that means that their ability to counter a shock or an economic problem really depends on the nature of the problem. Since 2008, we had more of a demand problem. It was big debt. Households and firms were trying more to deleverage, meaning pay back their debt, increase their saving, which made sense. The problem, if we all try to save a lot, well, you know, my income is your job, and conversely, we spend on each other. So if we all try to cut spending, we create a recession, and we do so too much. Yeah. So the central bank's job in that context is to make sure that the belt tightening doesn't get overboard. And that's what they did in 2008, massive expansion of the balance sheet, making sure the financial system doesn't freeze. Because if you want to turn a recession in a depression, we know how to do that. You basically mess up the banks. And that works all the time. So that's really what they wanted to do. With the Ukrainian conflict, now they have something very different, what we call a supply shock. The problem is coming from the fact that several essential commodities are now more expensive and less available. Well, the central bank cannot undo that. Central banks cannot just issue more steel or coal or oil or whatever. So their job in that context is to make sure that we don't go in denial. There is a problem, a very unpleasant one. The central bank cannot make it go away. What it can do is make sure that this problem doesn't spill over into other problems, i.e. inflation. So we're having bad news, we have to face up to it, and the central bank would say, okay, I will limit the damage. By my policy, I will make sure that at least we don't get inflation. It would be great if the central bank could undo the root problem of supply, but this is not something they can do about because it's not coming from the demand.
Right, right. You mentioned 2008 in your answer. So I have to ask, is this, are we, what we're living right now, is this a paradigm shift compared to 2008 to 2022?
I don't see it that way. I think we can read the whole story still within the paradigm of central bank, which is price stability. Now, for many years, we lived, at least in advanced economy, with low or even negative inflation. So price stability may feel like a bit of a, you know, something economists worry about, but, you know, why should the broader public? But bear in mind that inflation, when it gets entrenched, like in the 70s, is something that is hard to get rid of. Inflation is also a form of a tax. You lose purchasing power, and it's a tax that is very antisocial. Many studies have shown that who really suffers are the lowest income. The wealthiest ones, well, they can always access investments or financial products that will shield them. But if all you have is a standard bank account or cash, you feel the inflation more. So price stability is something very unpleasant and very antisocial. Price stability. I mean, of course, as your opponent. So central banks has this as to do, and that's what they've been designed to do. So there was a big, the paradigm shift was really more in the 80s and 90s, where central banks before were trying to do a little bit of everything, trying to limit unemployment. And then the shift was like, no, the core job is price stability. If conditional on price stability, you can help employment by all means. That's how one should read the double mandate of the Federal Reserve. The law says it should do both, but de facto is like, okay, make sure inflation doesn't go up. You know, if you can do that without creating unemployment, that's even better. But there is a clear hierarchy there. So their job is price stability. With this in mind, how do we read 2008 to now? Well, 2008 was a shock really to the financial system. Okay, everyone was panicked. We all started saving a lot. People wanted cash instead of a bank account. So what the central bank did is to make sure that this tightening of demand did not push us into deflation, meaning falling prices, which is something that is actually much more damaging than inflation in a way, because if you are a debtor and you try to pay your debt, but you have deflation, what it means is the real burden of your debt goes up. Your debt is in franc or dollar. So when the price goes down, a given franc of debt is actually heavier. So central banks were very aggressive to that to prevent deflation. So square in line with the mandate of price stability. They had to use very unusual tools. So because interest rates were going to zero, a bit below, they couldn't only use that. So that's why balance sheet expanded. That's why in Switzerland they did a lot of foreign exchange interventions. Now they face the worst problem. Now inflation is going up. So, okay, so they go into the good old world of central banking, so to speak, where you can increase interest rate and you do that to fight inflation. So we're still perfectly within the mandate of price stability. So the fact that things have moved in very heterogeneous way is not that central banks have changed what they're after. It's just that they have to adjust to their tools. To pursue the same objective, but first in an environment where price were falling, if anything, and now in an environment where price are increasing.
Right. And are negative rates a thing of the past now?
For the short term, yes. They're clearly going up. The interesting question is, what about beyond 2-3 years from now? I'm not sure they're gone. to be honest. And why that? Well, to understand why rates were negative, it's important to understand that there were structural factors behind that. So in economics, we have what we call the nominal interest rate, the interest rate we all know and see. But we also have what we call the real interest rate, which is the interest rate adjusted for inflation. The real interest rate is really what the functioning of the economy gives you. So it reflects productivity, it reflects demographics, it reflects also risk aversion. So if we all want to save in a safe asset, well, its return is going to show. What we've seen starting in the 80s is a very pronounced downtrend in real interest rates. So this predates the financial crisis. It accelerated in the financial crisis. And there's been a lot of research of why what was going on there. And this is really measure of rate when you filter out inflation and the business cycle. And what research has shown that it reflects demographics. With population aging, we save more. Well, if you save more, then you push down the interest rate. There was also the fact that emerging economies became bigger in the world and they save a lot, more than advanced one. Another element was people were a lot after what we call safe assets, investment where you don't have to worry about price collapsing. And what is the ultimate safe assets? It's a U.S. Treasury. Okay, when you look at a couple of billion dollars, this is hard to beat. That pushed down this interest rate. This factor have not gone away. Demographics, by definition, is something that moves very slowly. Risk aversion, well, we have a major conflict in Europe. If anything, risk is going up. So I don't see these factors going away. And so the trend real interest rate is actually quite low. So once a central bank fights this inflation wave, and expectation so far is that they will and they will succeed, well, the inflation goes away, so the interest rate will be able to come down and this underlying structural factor will reveal themselves again. So I wouldn't be surprised if 2-3 years from now, we will find ourselves again talking about zero low bound negative interest rate and like that. I could, of course, be wrong, but that's what forecasting is about.
And there's a lot of discussion right now that our current situation could lead to a recession. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on that?
That's a risk. So when central bank, let's say, are faced with this adverse shock, okay, we have commodities are more expensive. So the central bank job is to make the economy understand, look, times have changed. It's not fun, but let's not go in denial. And so we will calm down demand. The idea of central bank is we put demand in line with supply, okay, and do so to avoid pressure on prices. Now, you can overdo it. This is not an exact science. You do policy with data that are always a bit outdated. Also, we do better that than we used to, but still, there's always imprecision. So it's like you're driving a car, but the steering wheel is not so tightly connected to the wheel. So, you can imagine how comfortable that can be. So there is the risk of recession. So far, if we look at forecast, and you should always take them with, some caution, of course, at least for advanced economy, we're more talking about a slowdown than a recession. So we don't really foresee a contraction of economic activity. Why is that? Well, the shock of the Ukraine war came in a time where the economy was booming. If anything, it was booming too much. If we go back to early 2022, the central banks discussion were more like, we had this COVID shock, but we had done a lot of support. Now this money was wanted to get spent. So there was already a situation where unemployment was low. There was already some inflationary pressure. So this is a sign of an economy that's healthy. But if anything, can get carried away. So then comes this adverse shock. So you have to cool down the economy probably faster than you would have otherwise. But you're not in a situation where you would already have unemployment. So the Ukraine war shock hits against an economic background that was actually quite good. That means that all you have to do is to slow down growth. You don't literally have to go and have a big recession. So I'm cautiously optimistic on that one. I say cautiously because these things is not something you can pilot very finely. But at least we started from a situation where we were not already in a depressed state with a lot of unemployment.
Yeah.
Quite the opposite, actually.
Thanks for that. And my final question, I guess, has to be, how long do you think we'll be in this situation of high inflation?
Okay, so it depends to a large extent of how long the supply shock lasts. The thing that is important is that we might keep an eye on what we call expectations. Okay, so we see inflation today, but we want to have a measure of what do firms and households think about expectation will be in the future. Now, why do we stress that? It's because inflation is a forward-looking process. If I'm a firm, and I'm going to think of whether I adjust my price, I'm going to look at how much I have to pay for my inputs, the labor, etc. So I look at the situation today. But I also look tomorrow, and I say, well, what do I expect of my competitors to do in 6 months? If I expect them to increase prices, well, I may as well already take the chance to do it preemptively now, so in 6 months I don't have to do it again. So if firms and households expect inflation in the future to be high, they will preempt that by already increasing their price and wage demands. And there's a lot of research that show that. So the central bank, you want to really tell the firms, like, look, now you have a price pressure. But in 6 months or a year, we'd have calmed everything down, so your competitor won't want to move. So only think about your current situation. We take care of the future. And if you do that, you actually prevent the snowball effect of inflation and wages, etc. So that's a lot of emphasis in modern macroeconomics on expectations. Now, of course, and we ask, well, what do the expectations do? We have to measure them, which is imperfect. We have sources to surveys of firms and households. You can extract the expectation from financial markets. What this shows, by and large, is expectation of inflation staying high for a year or two, but not beyond. So this expectation say, okay, we have bad news. The central this will fuel some inflation, but the central bank are reacting. They're on top of things. They will get the job done. And after 2 years, we're back to square one of low inflation. Now, of course, for this to happen, the central banks have to act. So the central bank cannot say, expectations are fine, so I do nothing. No, because expectations are fine precisely because people expect you to do something right now. So you have to validate these expectations. So I don't think we're in a situation where we will see durably high inflation like we did in the 70s. Central banks have learned the 70s lessons the hard way, and they're very much focused on that.
Great. Well, thank you very much for this very interesting conversation on inflation. And thank you for joining us for this podcast episode.
Thank you.
That was Professor Sidrik Tsil discussing the rise of inflation and what can be done about it. This podcast series is produced by the Geneva Graduate Institute Communications team. For more information about the Institute, please visit our website at graduateinstitute.ch. I'm Dan Graham. Thanks for listening.